Hi, this is Perry, and you're listening to the Chemist Corner podcast for Wednesday, September 28th, 2011. Welcome to Chemist Corner. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, scientist, and according to Google, still the world's most famous cosmetic chemist. You can look it up. Chemist Corner is a podcast about cosmetic science and is broadcast to help educate, entertain, and inspire current and future cosmetic scientists. The information and opinions discussed on Chemist Corner are those of the hosts and the guests alone. They do not necessarily reflect those of any past, present, or future employers. All right, on today's program, we have an interview with Duncan Abbott. If you spend any time in the cosmetic science forums, you will have probably run into Duncan Abbott. He's a prolific writer on the forums. He's a longtime cosmetic formulator from the UK who has worked for a variety of companies. In addition to the interview, we're also going to cover a couple of cosmetic science stories in the news and cover some of the different cosmetic science programs from around the world. So let's get started with some cosmetic science news that I found interesting. There are a few stories this week that caught my eye. The first was a report from the Norwegian Institute of Public Health about adverse effects of cosmetic products. In 2008, the Norwegian government created a register for people to lodge reports of any adverse reactions to cosmetics. During the first 2 years of reporting, they found that the cosmetics that gave the most serious adverse effects were permanent hair dyes. This is really no surprise because these are certainly one of the most reactive and possibly dangerous types of ingredients that people are exposed to when it comes to cosmetics. Others would include relaxers and depilatories. In the 2 years of operation, 7 people have complained of allergic reactions to hair dyes. They reported symptoms of eczema, redness, blistering, and itching. Really awful stuff for your skin. Worse is that these symptoms lasted for weeks or even months afterwards. Can you imagine after having a reaction to a cosmetic and it lasts like months later? While hair dyes were the most reactive ones, they weren't the ones that were most widely reported. In fact, facial and body moisturizers were actually the ones that received the most complaints. The adverse effects that people wrote about these products included mild symptoms, but they usually disappeared after a few hours. Some symptoms included rashes, blistering, people reported eczema, and some itching. It just demonstrates that no matter how safe your cosmetic is, it could have a reaction with most any person. These results are not terribly surprising, as moisturizers are left on the skin for extended periods of time. It makes sense that they would most frequently cause reactions. And the reactive nature of hair color also makes it unsurprising that these would cause severe reactions. No doubt these products were tested before being marketed, but it's a thing to keep in mind. No matter how much safety testing you do for your formulations, there's probably someone out there who will have a negative reaction to it. You just have to be prepared for that, and if somebody does complain to you and you're, say, a small business owner or your company asks you, you should immediately refund their money. You cannot formulate a non-reactive product for every person in the world. It just can't happen. The next story that I found interesting was one entitled Yale Scientists Find Stem Cells That Tell Hair It's Time to Grow. One of the holy grails of cosmetic science is the development of a topical product that can restart hair growth to prevent baldness. For centuries, people have been creating products that purport to do this. Unfortunately, the results thus far have not been stellar. In fact, there is almost nothing that actually works to restart hair growth. Minoxidil is the only approved topical treatment in the United States, and even it doesn't work for most people. And most people who use minoxidil are disappointed in the end results. One of the problems is that it is still not completely understood how or why hair stops growing. Certainly, researchers have found lots of information about what goes on when hair stops growing, but they really don't know why or how the whole process works. But researchers continued to look for clues. Now, according to this research out of Yale, scientists have discovered a cellular signal that triggers hair growth. It turns out there are stem cells within the skin's fatty layer that create molecular signals that tell hair to start growing. They believe that if they can get the fat cells in skin to communicate with the dormant stem cells, they might be able to restart the hair growing process. The next step is to figure out what the signals are that are produced by the stem cells that get hair to start growing, and then perhaps make some sort of solution of those ingredients that can be topically applied. Of course, then they have to hope that the signals are the same in humans as they are in mice, because the subject of this research was just mice. It is an interesting development and seems a pretty good lead by researchers, but don't count on any topical treatments to be ready anytime soon. I'm guessing nothing will come out of this for 10 to 20 years, if anything comes out of it at all. Research like this really has proven to move very slowly. Finally, here's a quick news story about the colors that are predicted to be popular in 2012. I only bring this up because it might affect the color choice of your future products, so you should really pay attention. According to Happy, that reported on this story up from Pantone, who is the global authority on color, they say that the following will be the top hues of 2012. There's Tangerine Tango, which I guess is some kind of orange. Then there's Solar Power, which is yellow. And Bellflower, which is purple. And then there's Cabaret, which is pink or fuchsia. There is a blue. There is a light green called Margarita. And a couple others. I did a blog post on this, so you can see a picture of the colors if you go to the ChemistCorner.com website and check it out. You should expect that your marketing people will come to you, and if they do ask you for new colors, you could present these as really fashion-forward colors. So if you do show them that, you can support it with this evidence from Pantone, and they will be happy that you're tied in to the world of fashion, because these are the colors that the future fashion designers are going to use for colors, and presumably one or a few of them will be popular. We frequently get asked here on Chemist Corner about training programs in the cosmetic industry, so much so that we actually created our own online training course that, of course, you can get to at the training program tab at the top called The Complete Cosmetic Chemist. However, I understand that though that type of training is not for everybody, and there are many other options for increasing your education about cosmetic science. These include programs ranging from 4-year university degrees to 1-hour online seminars. We've compiled a list of all the cosmetic science training programs that we could find from around the world. First are cosmetic science advanced degrees. There is the University of Cincinnati. They have an online degree program which focuses on design, evaluation, and control of cosmetic products. They are nationally acclaimed Masters of Science in Pharmaceutical Science with an emphasis in cosmetic science. Lectures are offered asynchronously over the internet to accommodate work and travel schedules of people who want to take the courses without distracting them from current employment. However, you're going to have to visit Cincinnati at least a few times to take finals and things. But the University of Cincinnati is one of the primary and premier degree places for cosmetic science. Another university is Fairleigh Dickinson. They offer a Master's of Science with a concentration in cosmetic science. This concentration, the first of its kind in New Jersey, was begun in 1982 with the support and approval of the Society of Cosmetic Chemists. Today, FDU's cosmetic science program continues to fulfill the needs of those responsible for creating commercial products in the cosmetics, toiletries, and fragrance industries. It enables people to learn the latest advances in the field, and it also helps students to develop skills that can lead to senior assignments in the cosmetic industry. The Fairleigh Dickinson courses actually teach you to become formulators. There's also the Long Island University, which offers an MS in pharmaceutics. The graduate program in cosmetic science provides a blend of coursework in the areas of chemistry, pharmacology, toxicology, microbiology, and pharmacy. We have the Singapore Polytechnic, which offers a diploma in perfumery and cosmetic science. The curriculum for this course focuses on teaching students the fundamentals of chemistry before they embark on subjects that have strong emphasis on applications. Areas include sensory training for perfumery, fragrance creation, formulation of cosmetic products, and cosmetic science, as well as marketing. In the UK, there is the De Montfort University offering a pharmaceutical and cosmetic science Bachelor's of Science degree. These courses are delivered by a team of subject experts. The courses are designed in the first year to deliver subjects as such as biochemistry, chemistry, and microbiology, and then formulation through a comprehensive course in compounding process technology are also introduced in later years. Next, we have the London College of Fashion in the UK, and you can achieve a Bachelor of Science in Cosmetic Science. It's a full-time undergraduate level program that is designed to take 3 to 4 years to complete. It should be noted that this is sponsored by the Cosmetics, Toiletries, and Perfumery Association. In Australia, they have the Monash University, which is a Bachelor of Pharmaceutical Science. In India, there is the Somalwar Academy Education Society. So they offer a 4-year Bachelor of Cosmetic Technology. I also recently heard of one at Manhattan College in New York. And there is also a program out of the University of Toledo for cosmetic science. So there are a few new cosmetic programs out there. There are also online courses. In addition to the complete cosmetic chemist program, which I had mentioned, you can go through the Diploma in Cosmetic Science by Distant Learning produced by the Society of Cosmetic Scientists over in the UK. This course is modular in construction and allows flexibility in learning. But you're expected to complete this course within 1 year, and to complete it, you have to finish some examinations. In Australia, they have the Institute of Personal Care Science. This is a cosmetic product and personal care training institute that offers diplomas in personal care development, promotion, and formulation. Diplomas are offered throughout the nation of Australia through distance education, so you're able to improve your career any time or place that suits you. For some training courses, you can go through Special for Chem e-training courses, and they have a variety of webinars on subjects such as silicones, natural ingredients, emulsions, etc. These are typically 90 minutes long, and then sometimes they'll have a 30-minute question and answer, and they're taught by leading experts. The Center for Professional Advancement also has a cosmetic research and development training programs. They have some live classrooms and some online training options, of course. Also, I should mention the Society of Cosmetic Chemists has a variety of continuing education courses that are taught in the United States. They mostly focus on the New Jersey, New York area, but you can find courses around the country, and topics include pretty much anything from the cosmetic industry that would be relevant. I actually teach the beginning cosmetic chemistry course, and so that's a lot of fun. So there you have it, all the programs that we could find around the world for the cosmetic industry. In a previous podcast, we talked with one of the instructors from Fairleigh Dickinson, so you can go back and listen to that show for more information on that. As we find more programs, we will add to this list, and you can check it out on the blog and to find the complete list of everything and links to all the programs that I talked about.
Duncan Abbott has been in the cosmetic industry over 20 years and has worked for cosmetic companies such as Alberto Culver and Miller Beauty. He is currently the development manager at Simple Health and Beauty. Welcome to the program, Duncan.
Hello there, Perry. How are you today?
I am great. How are things over on the other side of the pond?
Oh, they're good. They're good. Nice sunny day, which makes a change, I must admit.
Yes. Well, we've had you on the program today because, of course, you're a cosmetic chemist and you've been at it for a while. But I particularly enjoyed your input on the Cosmetic Science Forum and all the things that you, all the interactions you have on internet forums like on LinkedIn. And I think you have a lot to add to the cosmetic industry, and you provide a great voice for cosmetic chemists everywhere, and we just wanted to hear a little bit about how you got involved in the industry.
Well, I didn't intend to come into the industry in the first place. I'm one of the guys who sort of fell into the industry by accident. As you mentioned, I worked for Alberto Culver for 18 months down in Swansea, and that I thought, oh, that'll be a nice job until Christmas, pay for a few Christmas presents, and nearly 20 years later, I'm still here.
Wow, now that first job, what did you do for Alberto Culver?
I was a regular lab technician that was taking formulations, making up products, and putting them on stability testing. So I started off at the doing the bare basics, and then hopefully I've learned a bit more over the years and gone into formulating my own products and carrying on and doing more and more complex things, and here I am, sort of 20 years late, 20 years later, a development manager at Simple.
Now, what type of background did you have before you got into the cosmetic industry?
I'm a graduate chemist. When I first graduated, I thought I was going to go into the pharmaceutical industry doing organic chemistry. Unfortunately, there weren't too many jobs about in that. So, as I say, I came into the industry as a chemical related job. It's I think there's a lot of people in the industry who are like me. You know, they didn't, when you're at college, the cosmetics industry isn't something that's highlighted too much, certainly not in UK universities. So you come in not knowing quite what to expect, but once you get the hang of it, it's very enjoyable indeed.
Yeah, that's a common story that we've heard in a lot of these interviews and a lot of chemists that I talk to. It's pretty rare that somebody is in college and they say, I want to be a cosmetic chemist. And I think it's just because people don't really know about the industry.
Yeah, it's one of those best kept secrets. Everybody uses our products every day, but nobody really in the general public sort of sits back and thinks, how do they do that? You know, our products are the sort of things that become accepted, you know, and almost invisible sometimes.
Yeah, and there's a lot of science behind them too.
Oh yeah, I mean that's the thing I found you had to learn on the job. The products themselves are formulated, but there's science behind the raw materials that we use, the science behind the interactions that they have, even though for the end consumer that the product just seems quite easy and simple and very straightforward to use. There's a lot of clever guys out there, certainly formulating raw materials. You know, I quite often use their expertise quite easily just to, you know, get some good brains behind what I'm trying to do.
Yes, indeed. Now, when what classes do you think are the best for college students who are looking to get into the cosmetic industry? What kind of classes should they be sure to take or take an interest in?
Well, I think a lot of the job is thinking scientifically. So I would say any college scientific course, I come from a chemistry background, but I think anything biology, natural science, that those sort of backgrounds will be good. I mean, I've worked with people who've come from cookery courses and, you know, wanted to be chefs. And they think in the same way a formulator does. So there's no one true way to become a cosmetic chemist. That if you, I think if you're observant, you look and see what you're doing, that can be good enough. But being able to write fluently, be good with numbers, that helps.
Yeah, I've formulated is a lot like cooking. That's what I've found, and I've always thought it would be fun to have one of those shows. You have one over at in the UK. It's like a Top Chef show where you have these competitions with chefs. I just thought it would be interesting you could have one like that for cosmetic chemists.
Well, The time pressures are the same in a laboratory sometimes as they are in a pro kitchen. So I suspect it'll make good viewing. Perhaps we could have Gordon Ramsay presiding over it, though perhaps we'd have to moderate the language a bit.
Yes, indeed. So right now, what opportunities do you see in the cosmetic industry? You know, it's kind of older science, or it's developed science, and but there are still a lot of problems that consumers are having. What kind of products do you think still need to be invented in the cosmetic industry?
Well, I think a lot of the new products out there are coming from people thinking different. I mean, there's always going to be space in the market for products that are a twist on something that everybody's used for years, but you take sideways and put to a completely different use. For instance, some of the big companies have been doing lots of rollerballs. I mean, rollerballs were used for deodorants back when I was a kid. And it just takes that looking at things and thinking, gee, how could I use this differently? Or, you know, when everybody sees it, they will say, why didn't I think of that? But that's why the guy who has that idea will go a long way, and we'll be just thinking, ah, we've got to match that now.
Yeah, there is a lot of matching going on.
Yeah, I mean, I used to work in private label, and yes, we get benchmarks there. I always like to think, you know, you're following in the footsteps, and that's good. But if you can add a bit extra to it, make your product better, that's a worthwhile job.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the environment these days, with government regulation things, has been made the job a bit more challenging. How has the regulatory environment affected your job as a cosmetic chemist?
Regulations, certainly in some of the products I work with, I've had to deal with a lot of regulations. I have a background in sun care, and that's probably one of the most regulated product types in the world. I mean, in the EU, we're quite lucky in that they're cosmetic products. But when I dealt with people in the US, they have all the FDA regulations to cope with, and that's very challenging for them. Safety-wise, we in Europe have REACH. I think from a formulator's point of view, that doesn't necessarily affect us as much. But for the raw materials guys, they've had a lot of work to do. I think if a lot of the regulation, if it's sensible regulation and helps protect the general public and stops people having problems, it can be a good thing. But I think there's always that balancing act of working with it and trying not to be overwhelmed with it. You know, regulations is part of life these days, so we have to sort of work with it if it's sensible. Or if it's not so sensible, we have to work around it. And I think that's going to be something that's going on for years to come. I think the days are over when a little guy in his shed can put something out that's not tested or anything like that and make money on it. He's got to think more constructively now, more scientifically. But that's just my personal view. I know a lot of the small guys, certainly in the States, are having issues with that. So wait and see.
Yeah, it's getting a lot tougher for a small guy, even in the United States, to launch their own line. It just costs so much money to have all the relevant testing and such.
Yeah, that said, though, a lot of the testing I have to do is purely safety and efficacy. That's protecting the customer. I like to think I can formulate stuff that's safe, efficacious. We're dealing with chemical products here that you think you can tell them what to do, but in reality they tell you what to do. So you're always going to get caught out. Every chemist will have a story about that, but if you pay for the testing, you know you've got a good, safe, solid product. You know, you deserve to be able to sell that and make a good profit on it.
Yeah, I suppose we do not want to flood the market with untested cosmetic products, no matter how genuine the formulator is.
Yeah, I mean, there are enough scare stories out in the public domain about how the cosmetics industry is poisoning people or damaging people. And I think if we're protecting the consumers ourselves by putting out good, reliable, honest products, the tinfoil hat brigade and the worriers and the people who want to give themselves a name for stirring up a lot of problems, you know, they won't have something to talk about, and that means we can get on and sell products and make people happy.
Yeah, indeed, and there certainly are a lot of chemical fear mongers out there.
Yes, I can think of several, but I think that they, you know, if we're doing our job properly, they find somebody else to have a go at. Everybody says, you know, oh, we don't care about our formulations. You know, we don't care if we hurt people. That's untrue. In my experience, all formulators will be testing products on themselves. They don't want to hurt themselves. So we do the best we can. Sometimes we make mistakes, but we try our hardest, I think.
That's been my experience too. I mean, when I formulated, I always tried every product I was making, and I certainly didn't want to poison myself.
Oh no. Well, most of the materials we use are perfectly safe anyway, so when you use them as directed by the manufacturers, they should be good. And yeah, we want people to come back and use our products again and again.
Exactly. Now, what advice would you have for someone who's just entering the industry? What are some of the things that you did that, helped you in your career or helped you figure out, solve some of the problems that you might have faced on your job?
When I first started in the industry, I very quickly realized that I didn't know as much as I thought I did. My advice will be, when you start in the industry, listen to people, learn from people who have experience. That could be colleagues in your lab, that could be people from raw materials companies telling you about their products and how best to use them, and have a go at formulating, learn, look and learn, see what works well, see what doesn't, and build on that knowledge. Try and learn as much as possible. I mean, I've been in the industry 20 years. There are still things that I'm learning every day, and I like to think I'm experienced. But yeah, I learn things every day, so that's the best advice I can give. Be prepared to learn.
That's one of the things that I loved about the industry too, is that as much as you know, there's always some area where you didn't know anything about that area. So there's always something new.
Oh, exactly.
Well, thanks so much for coming to the program, Duncan. If people want to get a hold of you, is there some way they can contact you?
You can contact me on the Cosmetics Corner website that you run, Perry. That will be a good way to do it.
Absolutely, right through the forum, and I'll put a link to the forum in there. But thanks a lot, and I look forward to meeting you sometime when either you come to the US or I head out there to the UK.
Look forward to meeting you, Perry.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Just a few announcements. Just a reminder that I have some upcoming speaking engagements. If you're in the area, please stop by and say hello. First, I'll be speaking at the Midwest Technical Symposium on Thursday, October 13th, 2011. This should be a fun event. It's right here in my hometown of Chicago. Specifically, it will be at the Westin Chicago, which is a hotel in Itasca, Illinois, conveniently located near the airport. You can see MidwestSEC.org website for more information. I'll also be speaking at the Southwest SEC meeting event in Dallas on October 20th. That should be fun, and I just learned from my publisher that I will be appearing on one of the local news stations on October 21st in Dallas. So that'll be a chance for me to be on TV in my role as a cosmetic chemist. We have a couple of events in November. I'll be speaking at the New England chapter of the Society of Cosmetic Chemists. I'm looking forward to that trip out near Boston. Now, remember to like us on Facebook. We do like to get people to keep track of us on Facebook. We publish some unique stuff there. Also, if you are on Twitter, be sure to follow us there. Our Twitter handle is Chemist Corner. What we do on Twitter is that we'll find links that are useful to cosmetic chemists, and we'll post them there, and we'll also post just a variety of observations we make about, say, other cosmetic science stories that don't make this show. Remember, you can still sign up for the complete Cosmetic Chemist training program by going to the chemistcorner.com website and just simply click on the training program. Also, if you haven't signed up for the free ebook and newsletter, you should do that because you get a free four-part mini course on cosmetic science, and we've got a lot of good feedback on that, so feel free to sign up with your email address on the website. Well, that's all for today's show. Thanks. Now, go make a difference.